HYY.
I'm Marty Moscoe, and welcome to Radio Times. The clashes between police and residents in Ferguson, Missouri became a national story this summer after the shooting death of Michael Brown. Across the river in Camden, New Jersey, it's a different story. The police department has undergone a transformation and is now part of a regional force. There are more officers on the street, and the crime rate, including shootings, has gone down. And while there are still tensions with the police, Camden residents have also said they are enjoying a safer city. Camden has faced many challenges over the years because of its high rate of poverty and unemployment, the numbers of high school students who drop out of school, and its system of governance. Could things be looking up in Camden? And we have two guests who have joined us on Radio Times. Here with us is Sister Helen Cole. She's a Camden nun with the Sisters of St. Joseph, also Executive Director of the Guadalupe Family Services. That's a social service agency with a focus on grief counseling with murder victims' families. And Sister Helen Cole, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. Also with us is Chief Scott Thompson, and he is the Chief of the Camden County Police, also a 20-year veteran of the Camden Police Force. And Chief Scott Thompson, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Good morning. It's an honor to be here.
Nice to have you both here. So what is the number one reason, from your perspective, for the crime rate to be down in Camden?
Well, I think it's a combination of things. I think when a police department can embrace the role of being guardian figures, of understanding that the top priority is to build community and that we are not warriors, we are not looking to arrest our way out of the situation, and we can, in essence, empower community. Right, we build community, and when the people in the neighborhoods respond in kind, like we have seen over the last year, some pretty terrific things can happen.
There are some enduring images from Ferguson from the summer. The idea of a police force using military equipment, police officers looking like members of SWAT teams. Is that going to happen in Camden?
Well, police need to be masters of de-escalation. Our job is much like doctors, right, is to do no harm. It's when we come across a critical incident. In society, we are the agency of first resort. When very bad things happen, we are thrust into those situations, generally with less than sufficient information and in ambiguous circumstances. And our job is to try to remedy that. How we train our officers and how we respond to these is it has to be congruent with that type of mentality. I don't have all the facts in front of me with what occurred in Ferguson, but I can tell you police chiefs across the country are scratching their head trying to figure out how, when you have a peaceful demonstration, albeit you may not like what they're saying, it's still a constitutional right for people to demonstrate and have redress of government. To put a sniper up on top of a truck, monitoring a crowd through an assault rifle, a scope, I mean...
pointed at the crowd.
Exactly. And that is something, it's neither effective or... I can't figure that out. And I don't think that helped the situation. And I do think that that's symbolic of some deeper problems that exist within that community and its government.
I do want to pick up on a number of things, so let me get you in on the conversation.
Sure.
Sister Helen Cole, you've been living in Camden for 25 years. What have you observed?
Well, I have observed the police department to be at its best and also at its worst. In thinking about coming here today, I was remembering back in like 1993, we would organize all the people in our neighborhood and literally march through the streets screaming drug-free in 93.
Also, 20 years ago,
yes,
right?
And we had a chief, his name was Bob Pugh, and we just chanted all through the streets, P-U-P-U. We were just tired. We were so tired of living the way that we were living. So to see the change right now is a very uplifting experience for me and for our community.
What's the most obvious change you've seen?
The most obvious change is that the drug dealers have gone underground. And I think that's, one of the things that the chief said. You said, what's the number one thing? The difference is they are not blatantly, lawlessly, and fearlessly selling drugs, not just on the corners, but off the porches, out of cars. You don't see that right now.
Let me pick up on that and go back to you. Has the drug trade then moved indoors?
Well, so we have seen is we've been able to have a significant impact with between the style of policing, and when I say the style of policing, I mean community policing, us empowering the community, us being guardians first and not warriors, by giving a sense of security to the good folks, they will leave their homes. They will come off, they will stop looking out their windows, they'll come on their front porch, they'll sit on their front steps, and they'll let their children play in the street. And that changes the dynamic of neighborhoods. And then you have an environment where criminals who once operated with impunity and a very small group, you know, four or five individuals who were in the trade of selling drugs could control an entire community. You know, blocks and have them in shutdown, have people be scared. But, you know, there's far more good people than are bad people. And when you can hit that tipping point of public safety where the good people outnumber the bad people on the street, it creates a very difficult environment for the criminal to exist. You know, one thing that we have found that's held true is it's very difficult for a dealer to sell drugs when a cop is standing next to him. So, again, we don't measure the success of our officers by the number of arrests they make or tickets they write, because that is an indication that something has occurred. You know, an arrest means a crime has occurred. Mm-hmm. Well, what we strive to do in the ideology that underpins everything we do is to prevent crime from occurring in the first place. So if we can be that guardian figure in the neighborhood and we can be a constant figure in there, the level of safety rises, good people come out, and then you don't need the police to maintain order and maintenance. The community does it themselves.
But are you saying that by moving the drug trade indoors, it has made the outdoors more safer, but that's something that it's easier for the police to monitor or control because it's sort of contained within buildings?
Well, that's a great question. So there's a couple things that become the byproduct of that. Is number one is the flagrant activity which generally accompanies drug dealing, shootings and murders and the like. They'll cease to exist in a public environment. We have heard far too often the number of times of children and innocent people being caught in a crossfire. That is something that we look to eliminate. That's something that you want to have zero occurrences happening within your community. But understanding that police and community engagement and community occupying public space is not going to change personal addictions or issues of poverty that lead a lot of people to sell drugs. But what we can do is if we alter their mental calculus of how they operate, it certainly starts to corral their activity. So now what we do see is we have seen a lot more use and activity of abandoned homes, and we're working very closely with the city to try to remedy that issue.
In fact, you said there's something like 3,000 abandoned buildings in Camden.
Yeah, that is correct. And Mayor Regis recently bonded close to $8 million to begin raising and remediation of over 1,000. Which is that is going to be a tremendous shot in the arm to not only our policing efforts but the community as well.
Yes,
the other thing that I would like to add to this is that it's not just about the drug dealers, but it's also about the addicted. And so we have a tremendous problem with those people who come into our neighborhoods. I call them drug seekers. You know, they're looking for their drugs. Right now they're having a little bit of a harder time finding their drugs. But I think that's another issue that, of course, in the social fabric of the city of Camden that has to be addressed, that not just the police department, of course, can eradicate that. But it's huge to see these people who come in and they're desperate, so desperate for drugs. And they also fuel the crime because they're stealing in order to keep their habit going. So, you know, there have been changes. We have seen the difference, but I at least recognize, and because I'm a social worker, I guess, I recognize there's other issues here that also create the problems that we have in our city.
And are the seekers largely then from outside of Camden, or maybe even from suburban Camden, or maybe even from Philadelphia?
Well, the chief can address that better than me, but I know we've had drug strings where it's been either 50-50 or
actually,
40-60.
You know, what we find is about 80% of our drug buyers are coming from outside of Camden, coming from Philadelphia. They're coming from the surrounding more affluent suburban neighborhoods. And these folks end up becoming the lifeblood to our open-air drug market, which was driving our violent gun problem, which was negatively defining the lives of communities and the city itself.
You were telling me before we went on the air that so far this year there have been 22 murders in Camden. I mean, obviously very tragic when there is a murder, but nonetheless, the murder rate in Camden has gone down over the last couple of years. Why do you think that is?
Well, it's eliminating opportunities to commit crime, particularly flagrant gun crime. Well, of our 22 murders, more than half of them have occurred inside abandoned structures that we were just talking about a few minutes ago, or inside a vehicle. They're not happening in the public space. You know, there are challenges that we battle as a police organization are, you know, it's many times we'll have our shooting victim has a worse record than our shooting suspect. But by attacking issues that that are contributors to the murder rate, particularly shootings. So we've got a pretty comprehensive strategy in working with our law enforcement partners to address the shootings. And when you look at this past summer, we've been able to reduce our shootings compared to 2012, 71%. I mean, that is significant. And when you can drop shootings 71%, you're going to have a decrease of over 50% in your murders is what we have as well.
Sister Helen, is there a connection then between, not all, but in number of cases, between murder victims and murder perpetrators?
Well, there is that connection that we already know about. But one thing I would like to add from the community perspective is that when the numbers of murders go down, there is a different sense in the neighborhood. There's a sense of relief. And as they go up, when we started counting 45, 46, 47, I mean, actually, it's a neighborhood depression. You know, people start feeling really down about this city they live in called Camden. So I think there's, for everybody, there's actually, and it sounds terrible, an excitement that there's only 22 so far. And people feel relieved about that. I think the other part of this, too, for us is we feel safe. And that adds to, I think, the decrease in shootings, too, because people are out. There's more people out on the street because they feel safe. And even the perception of safety, police officers walking the beat, the presence of police cars. I saw 6 cars this morning before I left to come over to Philly. That's a lot of police cars for me to see. That gives a perception of safety. I mean, the chief and I both know anything can happen at any minute, because we've been there long enough to see that. But we are, I think, encouraged. The whole neighborhood becomes more uplifted. And as the chief mentioned earlier, we become a community because people are outside talking to each other and feeling safe.
We're almost up on a break here. Are there, though, more police officers on the street as a result of this more regional force?
Since we transitioned on May 1st of 2013, we've been able to more than triple the deployment of officers that we have in the field. And like Sister said, when these officers are out there maintaining space with the mentality of being a guardian figure, of building community, of connecting with the youth, you know, you can drive down the street and see our cops having foot races with the youth out there. You can see our officers, you know, working hand in glove with the people every day, and that is what has made a significant difference.
We are talking about Camden in this hour of Radio Times. That's Chief Scott Thompson, and he is Chief of the Camden County Police. Also with us is Sister Helen Cole, and she is Executive Director of Guadalupe Family Services. You can join our conversation. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
VRE Presents supports WHYY and welcomes Pink Martini to the Keswick Theater September 19th. Also at the Keswick, a classical pop crossover with 2 cellos April 25th. Tickets at the Keswick box office and VREPresents.com.
Hi there, I'm Gian Gomeshi. Robert Downey Jr. is one of the biggest actors working on the big screen today. He joins me to talk about his role in the new murder trial drama, The Judge. Feature conversation with Robert Downey Jr. coming up on Q from PRI, Public Radio International.
Tonight at 9 on WHYY.
I'm Robin Young. So how much do animals and humans really have in common?
We find that animals not only behave the way we do, they may think the way we do too sometimes. Through modern technology like MRI, we see that brain areas in animals may be activated in ways that mirror our own.
Your dog can get jealous. That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
this afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
Supporting WHYY, the Lincoln Motor Company, introducing the first-ever Lincoln MKC with available active noise control that reduces unwanted cabin noise to help provide a more pleasant driving experience. More at Lincoln.com.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen. We are talking about Camden. The crime rate is down. And as our guests have been telling us, folks are out on the street now enjoying what Camden has to offer. And again, our guests are Sister Helen Cole, head of Guadalupe Family Services in Camden. And her work is focused largely on grief counseling with murder victims' families. So far this year, 22 murders in Camden, and that is down pretty dramatically over the last couple of years. And again, also with us is Scott Thompson, and he's the chief of the Camden County Police. And again, we want to hear from you at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. In fact, we have a tweet from Stephen. He says, why were police numbers so low prior to the change? Historically, numbers of police were much higher in the past. You've been on the force for about 20 years now, and those numbers, I think, have gone up and down. But there is a criticism that the police force was so sort of decimated by financial issues that the numbers were down, making it hard for them to respond to crimes and calls for help.
Yeah, that is correct. So when before our transition in May 1st of 2013, $62 million for the Camden City Police Department equated to about 250 officers. The same $62 million today equates to 411 officers for us, also with a significant civilian support staff to be able to make us smarter, faster, and better in our response out in the field.
Does that mean that people are getting paid less? Why are you able to have so many more police officers?
Well, it was mostly a restructuring of the of what was a cost prohibitive collective bargaining agreement. I mean, there were just, and like I came up through that organization, and there were just some things that were just obscene, for lack of a better word. I mean, there was a shift differential.
4%, I think.
Yeah, and even. So if you were a senior officer on night work, you were getting 22% on top of your base. I mean, these were just cost drivers, and it had gotten to the point where, and it's not the fault of any individual officer, right? But we found ourselves much like airline pilots or the auto industry. We had kind of priced ourselves out of a business.
Part of your work in Camden has been working with families who have lost family members because mm-hmm. of murder. Looking back even over the 25 years you've been in Camden, do you think it's been a city in mourning, in grief?
I definitely think our city has been impacted by the violence and by the homicides. I am a witness to the devastation that families experience once a loved one's been murdered. So I do think that that's a big part. But I also have to say I am also a witness to the resilience of the people in our neighborhood, and especially those families who have lost a loved one. It's absolutely amazing that people can recover, that people can continue with their lives and be able to be productive.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because I think you hear people just sort of writing off Camden, saying the problems are so intractable, they're so long-standing, there's really no way out. You say in response to that?
Well, I don't believe that, because I'm a witness. You know, I have worked with families who, a young girl, her mom was murdered, and now she is degreed from Rowan. She's working for DIFAS. She's helping other families that were in a situation like she was in. We have many, many high school students that we work with who are attending college. They just started last week. So for us, we have so many people who give us hope. Families and individuals who give us hope that we know that they can succeed despite all of the tragedy in our city and all of the challenges that come their way.
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, and I think the key word that Sister used is resiliency. You know, from being a cop on the street more than 20 years in the city of Camden, I can tell you that there's nothing that the people of that community cannot overcome. I mean, they've been beating the odds for decades. And I think it's evidenced in part by by the public safety gains that we've been able to make in such a short period of time. Look, this is not a unilateral police effort. This is not the police coming in and us riding in on a white horse and saving a day. This is about officers who understand their mission and have been working closely with the community and empowering the community. This is about a reclamation of neighborhoods, not militarization. And our greatest efforts in some of our more challenged neighborhoods are because of people like Sister Helen Cole and the people that live in that neighborhood that have been able to make it sustainable and continue to go out from there. I mean, who would have – I was probably the most optimistic person going into this, and I truly believed in my heart of hearts that this was the right thing to do for the city of Camden.
The regionalization of the police force.
Exactly. There was a moral imperative. Status quo can no longer exist. Our people were being victimized at third world country rates. And our elected leadership took a bold move and a visionary move to do this. It's not novel in the United States, but it's unheard of in this northeastern region. And to see how quickly – we've been able to change the dynamic on the streets is a testament to the people of the city.
Yeah, go ahead.
I met a woman last Friday who is living in Northgate Apartments. They're high rises. They've been drug filled and violence filled for years. And I said to her, "Oh, you know, are you going to move?" Because she had told me she wanted to do that. And she said, "Oh, not now." She said, "Northgate is totally changed. It's so safe." And I said, "Really? What happened?" She said, "The Metro Police happened." And so she told me that there's no longer people shooting up in the hallways, no longer drug dealing in the stairwells. And I asked her if we could call the chief and tell him that. And so I called the chief, and he actually picked up. And so one of the Camden residents was able to tell him herself the difference she sees in her own apartment living, which ripples out. It just ripples out to the whole neighborhood.
And not to take away anything that some of this good news that we've been talking about in Camden, but is there a point at which, with so many police officers on the street, it becomes, and I'm using this very carefully, I don't mean it as strongly as it is, but that becomes a police state. And I know there's surveillance cameras. There are all sorts of technology and tools that you're using, and also to keep the peace. But what is that fine line between being the sort of serve and protect to something more aggressive and assertive?
Well, it's understanding the mission and what our creed is, right? The creed of our organization is service before self. In the state of New Jersey, the oath of office is 53 words. We added an additional 33 words, which meant every member, including myself, that came into this organization since its existence has sworn a solemn oath to service before self, which means subjugating our needs for the greater good. We are not restricting the movement of freedom of people in the street. We are not dictating to their lives. We are not throwing people up against a wall and ordering them on the ground at gunpoint to maintain security. Our cops, and I got to tell you, I'm extremely proud of the effort that our officers have put forward every day. I got an email the other day about one of our officers that it was like something out of the United States Boy Scouts. Stopped his car and helped an elderly female cross the street by Northgate 2. It's that, and it's more than just me coming on here and saying these things. It's evidenced by what the cops are doing out in the street every day, because I could say this all day long, and if they were not out actualizing this, then we would just be spinning our wheels. But, you know, the cops who are out there are not out there heavy-handed. They're out there as guardian figures, and they understand that first and foremost. The measurement of their success is our children playing on the street, not the number of arrests they make.
I was reading some blog posts and frankly, that were critical of the police, talking about that there's still stop and frisk, there's still racial profiling going on in Camden. Can you answer that?
Well, yes, I can. I mean, we have, our officers are in the neighborhood, and we are addressing the things that matter most to the people that live there. When the community is telling us that they don't want loud radios blaring, when a car drives by with the bass that's shaking windows, we're gonna interact with that, and there's probably going to be enforcement on that. And you also got to remember too, Marty, where we've come from. We went from essentially within an 18-month period of zero police presence on the street, where criminals operated with absolute impunity, to the point now of having cops walking up and down the street and engaging citizens, talking to them, and that can change comfort levels. And it's, and that's not just for all the bad people, it's for the good people too, to go from never seeing a police officer to now seeing an officer friendly walking up the street asking you
and
every
is he
day
always,
how you're doing.
Is he always friendly?
I believe so, yes.
I guess.
But Marty, if he's not, you know, one of the things when I go to my community meetings, I give my cell phone out to the community, and my officers see that. And if and I tell the community, if you're being treated in a manner, you don't have to go through a cold call into the police department. Call my cell phone directly, and we'll get to the bottom of it.
And I can attest to that. We do have the chief's cell phone number, and I have seen him give it to others. And I think just to add to the observation of people and the videotaping, we go to Target today and we're videotaped. Everybody, look at Ray Rice in the elevator. Everybody's being videotaped today. So I don't think that that's a cry of the people in our neighborhood. Maybe outsiders might say that of us. But mm-hmm. I also think that when we look at some of the illegal activity that is going on today, when I'm an outsider sometimes looking in, I see that drug addiction is our affliction. Like, we're suffering because people are drug seeking, and it really does contribute to a lot of the crime in the neighborhood.
Let me reintroduce you quickly, and that's Sister Helen Cole. Again, she is Executive Director of Guadalupe Family Services in Camden. She's been living in Camden for 25 years. She's a nun with the Sisters of St. Joseph, and her work is focused on grief counseling with murder victims' families. Also with us is Chief Scott Thompson, and he is Chief of the Camden County Police. And we've been talking about the fact that the crime rate has gone down pretty dramatically in about 18 months since the police force was regionalized. And again, we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. In fact, we have a tweet from Joe: why were officers made to work overtime at the Susquehanna Center and not in high crime areas in 2012? So that goes back 2 years.
Well, that's a good question. They were doing both. We were under contract to provide police services to Susquehanna Center. We had an arbitration ruling placed upon us that for us to recall officers, we had to recall an entire platoon. We were doing both. We were battling a 30% absentee rate, which meant we had to force cops to fulfill our obligations.
Was every day? There was a 30% absentee rate?
On a daily basis, that's correct. And there were times we would hit 50, 60% on a day. There were times we would battle an entire blue flu where an entire platoon would call in sick. There were forced marches with overtime. When you get 30,000, 40,000 people on your waterfront, you've got an obligation to secure that as well. We were doing both. It was very tough. It just wasn't sustainable. And for the cops that lived through it, it was, they would tell you they wouldn't wish it on anyone. They would work a 16-hour day and then be ordered in a day off to work another 16-hour day.
Help us understand the work that you do as a grief counselor. What are the things you say, the steps you take? And I'm sure even if you're not a professional or a social worker as you are, people want to know how you deal with something that's so devastating, like the murder of a child or the murder of a family member.
Well, I think the first thing I always tell the families that I work with is that the truth is you will ache until the day you go to the grave yourself. I think I acknowledge first that people will never be the same. Their lives will never be the same. However, I also tell them that I am a witness, because I've been doing this for so long, to people's healing, and that I believe they can heal, and that I believe in time, and it really does take, if I did a study, I would say it takes about 7 years for a person to really be able to recover and enter into the swim of life again.
And do you stay with the families? Let's say there is someone is arrested. Through the whole sort of legal process.
I promise that as long as I'm healthy, I will help them. I call it companioning. I will companion them. The first family that I offered to help in 1995, I made that promise to, and it took 11 years for us to finally get a conviction.
11 years through the court system.
It was an 11-year journey through the court system. And that always prolongs people's healing, too. It's a different kind of pain and agony that people go through with the criminal justice system, and often they get re-victimized again.
Let me go back to you, and even looking at the drop in the crime rate, it's still relatively high. We're talking about a city of, what, 77,000, pretty high rate of poverty, unemployment, dropouts from schools, single-parent families. What is your next step? I mean, you can continue to do what you're doing now, but do you feel like there's something more, the next step that you've got to institute?
Well, there are many variables that go into the equation of public safety and thriving community, and police are just one variable in that equation, albeit I think we're probably one of the most important variables. It's 50 years of social inequity that plagued the city of Camden. The police aren't the panacea, right? There's things that we're doing well. We're doing much better. This is progress. This isn't success. But for the community to go to the next level, and for the city to start to get economic redevelopment, and you know, Father Boyle from
Sacred Heart.
That's Father Doyle.
Oh, Father Doyle. Okay.
Father Doyle, but a priest once said, and I don't want to plagiarize here, that nothing stops a bullet like a job. And that's what our community needs. And, you know, there are some amazing things that are happening right now with our school district, with Paymon. And, you know, one of the other statistics that often get overlooked is that 30% of our population is under the age of 18. That's 20% higher than Trenton, Newark, Jersey City, which means we have a very, very young city, which is primarily why arrest cannot be the tip of our spear. Otherwise, we're just incarcerating the youth, which creates that cyclical deficit, which is just going to go on and on and on. And we will constantly, as an organization, be treating symptoms instead of root causes.
So what do you do when you see someone breaking the law? You don't want to put them in the pipeline, so to speak. So what do you do?
Well, so it's about eliminating opportunities is what it is, right? We don't decriminalize drugs. We don't decriminalize illegal activity. When people commit crimes, they're still held accountable for. But we try to measure our success by preventing the crime from occurring in the first place. Again, it's very difficult to sell drugs if there's a cop standing on that corner. I could keep my force inside police headquarters, deploy in strategic laser bombing like fashions, and lock up drug dealers all day long. And if you were to try to measure our success by how many drug dealers did we arrest, I could arrest more per capita than anywhere in the United States. And as we had seen and history has shown us, you could go to a corner, make an arrest, and not be back in headquarters yet, and there's already another drug dealer out there selling. So really, is that a good tactic? Is that a good strategy? How about this? How about we maintain a presence on that neighborhood, on that corner? How about we eliminate the opportunity for drug dealing instead of just letting it occur and then take action afterwards?
You're nodding your head.
I am nodding my head. And I don't think if we went and took a poll of our children today, I don't think there's any of our teenagers or young adults out there saying, you know, when I grow up, I want to be a drug dealer. You know, there are kids out there who really show us potential, but we need to give them those opportunities as well to be able to be more productive with their lives.
Well, let's take a very short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation. We are talking about Camden, its drop in violent crime. And again, our guests are Sister Helen Cole. She's a Camden nun with the Sisters of St. Joseph, Executive Director of Guadalupe Family Services. She's a social worker working with murder victims' families on grief counseling. She has been living in Camden for 25 years. Also with us is Chief Scott Thompson. He's Chief of the Camden County Police, a 20-year veteran of the force. And we are talking about their work, the challenges facing Camden, and some good news out of Camden as well. We want to hear from you. That phone number, 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. We'll be right back.
Did you grow up in a chaotic household or live with someone who abused drugs or alcohol? Over 60% of Americans grow up experiencing some type of household dysfunction, abuse, or neglect. The Penn Center for Women's Behavioral Wellness supports WHYY and is seeking menopausal women between the ages of 48 and 60 who experienced a stressful or chaotic childhood to participate in a study examining how early life stress affects memory later in life. Study participation includes brain imaging, blood draws, and memory tests. More information by contacting Claudia at 215-41-STUDY.
Sherry, baby. On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Bob Gaudio, who played with the Four Seasons and wrote or co-wrote their hits. He's one of the people behind the Broadway musical Jersey Boys. A new anthology collects his songs as performed by the Four Seasons, Frankie Valli, and others. Join us
this afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
Next time on The Takeaway, Henry Kissinger, the former Secretary of State, National Security Advisor, and geopolitical chess master, talks about the balance of power, new threats in the Middle East, and his own role and responsibility for the shape of the world. That's next time on The Takeaway from PRI, Public Radio International.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. We are talking about Camden, one of the poorest cities in the country, in one of the wealthiest states in the country. It is now policed by a regional police force after the previous department was eliminated. The crime rate is down, and again, we're talking with Scott Thompson, and he's the chief of the Camden County Police, and with Sister Helen Cole, head of Guadalupe Family Services in Camden. And we have calls coming in at 1-888-477-9499. And again, you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. Again, one of the criticisms of this more regionalized force is that you don't have people that know the city. You're not drawing your police force from people who either live in the city or are familiar with the city. You're drawing from I guess, the whole region. What is your response to that criticism? And if you're talking about community policing, you need people to know the community.
Yeah, well, you know, there's only one way to get to know the community, and that is through human contact. And that's what our officers are doing on a daily basis. You know, one of the challenges I had when I first became chief back in 2008, and that was with a department that was you had to be a resident to be hired. And what the community had said to me was that the police force was apathetic and lethargic. And that's a criticism that I took personal because, you know, I work within this organization. But the chief complaint was that our cops didn't get out of their squad cars.
They don't get out of the cars.
Right. And that life cut both ways. You know, there were times I would have disgruntled community folks in community meetings that would say to me, you know, send me a cop that doesn't get out of the car and hug and shake hands with the drug dealers. They grew up with them. Well, you know, give me somebody that is not as known in the community as some of your officers are. So you got to try to strike a balance there. And, you know, the fact of the matter is diversity is very important. And we have gone to great lengths to diversify the organization. You know, 45% of our organization is diverse. And that's coming in a time with extreme challenges for law enforcement to attract minorities. We were able to change the representation of our command staff from a third to two-thirds. So two out of every three commanders in our organization are reflective of the community.
Either Hispanic or African American.
Yeah, that is correct. And we're an organization now that speaks 11 different languages. But again, you know what you find. And look, I'm a white male, and I've worked in the city for years, and I've never had issues with race relations and me getting along with Hispanics and African Americans in the city. And it really boils more down to the core of the human being. And do you care about that individual? And if what the people in our city, in our communities, our neighborhoods want to know is that you're in this with them, that you say what you mean and mean what you say, and they're going to judge us more on our actions than on our reflections.
Do you think
the bottom line is trust? I think that if people trust an officer, they will tell him information that's going to help make our city safer. And I think that goes for any of us in any helping profession. It doesn't really matter what color we are, but people can tell. They'll be able to tell if they can trust us and if we're going to keep our word and do what we said we were going to do, either to protect them or assist them in some way.
You've lived in Camden for 25 years, so do you know who the drug dealers are? Do you
know them? I taught some of those drug dealers. When I first went to Camden, I taught second grade for 3 years, and there's been times when I used to, because now they're not on the corners. I used to walk by the corner store, and I would see somebody I knew, and I would just say, Jonathan, I can't believe you're out here dealing drugs. I said, I'm going to be going to your funeral.
And what would they say?
They would sometimes turn their heads and pull their hoodies down because they were embarrassed and ashamed. And often some of the kids I teach, when I would pass them by, that's what they would do. They would pull their hoodies up so that I wouldn't acknowledge them, even though they knew I knew who they were.
And if there were jobs that they could do, do you think they would not be on the corner selling drugs?
I think that there would be. You know, I think everybody wants money. Everybody wants to have the jewelry, the boots, the clothing, you know, all those things that we're drawn to, and as well as a car and housing. I do think that if people are guided, we have actually things, you know, that are happening for kids today that we see the results of that, that if they have guidance, that they will choose to be educated and they'll choose to be in a good legal paying job.
We have a tweet from someone who calls himself Big Joe. What is the chief doing about normal, hardworking residents getting treated like criminals in our own city?
Well, if Joe, you're experiencing that, I encourage you and all the listeners to let us know immediately. We don't tolerate that. Look, we're an organization of human beings. We went to great lengths to try to bring on the absolute best people we could in this organization. But rest assured, when you have 400 officers, there's the odds are that you're going to probably have some that are in the wrong line of work. We need to know about it. I need to know date, times, locations. Give us a call. Let us know when you were mistreated, and we will get to the bottom of it. You know, in that same vein, I'd also like to say that, you know, I'm a strong proponent of officers wearing video cameras. And right now we are in the process of trying to find the best video system that'll integrate with our IT infrastructure that we have. And before too long, all of our officers are going to be outfitted with body cameras, which will, you know, put a very quick end to either officer misconduct or false allegations. You know, and there are plenty of both. You know, there are plenty of times that we get the allegations that just aren't true, and there's times out there that officers are mistreating people. But you know what we find is when the community lets us know these things, generally where there's smoke, there's fire. And Joe, if you've been mistreated, then there's odds are that someone else has been mistreated. And if you let us know when that occurred, we can get to the bottom of officers that are doing that.
Can you put your cell phone out on Radio Times?
Excuse me?
Can you tell us your cell phone number?
609. This is the one,
856-295-1871. 1871. Okay, that's great. Big Joe, thanks for the tweet there.
Look forward to your call, Big Joe.
Just a follow-up question there. Let's say there is an officer that, according to Joe, is mistreating residents. What can you do about it? And I know you have a union you have to deal with. Can you get rid of that person?
Well, it all depends, right? Sometimes it can be addressed through training. Sometimes it can be addressed through progressive discipline, and sometimes there's ultimately their termination needs to take effect. I mean, sometimes, so again, some people are in the wrong line of work. But you know, cops are human beings. Sometimes an officer just has a bad day, or many times what we find is that it has less to do with the communication, and that's one of the things we try to really focus on and train our officers is, look, if you're going to pull somebody over for having a radio blaring at 11 o'clock at night, there's no reason why we can't do that in a sir and ma'am fashion and do it with an explanation. So we took an enforcement action. Well, do you know that we've had people in this block that have get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and there's small children here, and you know, it's been a number one complaint of the community, and if you could please keep your radio down, and at the same time, I mean, that's an enforcement action, and as opposed to just handing somebody a ticket saying, if you've got a problem with it, see it in court.
Let me just read her email here, going back to you, Chief, which is, what was the diversity of the former police department? You said it's 45% now. My understanding from before, it was closer to 70%, is that right?
It was 60%.
60%. So it's less diverse, I guess, than it was before.
Well, it's less diverse from an officer standpoint, more diverse from a command staff standpoint.
The sort of higher-ups are more diverse.
That is correct, which your command staff or your policymakers. They're the folks that are setting the cadence and ensuring the actions and the activity of the officers under their command.
Let me get to Bill from Camden, New Jersey, to join us on Radio Times. Hi, Bill. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Good morning. I'm loving this show.
Thank you.
I'm a retired police officer from Camden, and I worked under Chief Thompson. I know him. He's the real deal. And he has taken the police department from the 20th century to the 21st century. He's doing innovative things. I loved it when I worked for him. I just retired 2 months ago. And he personally brought me to his office and shook my hand. So he's not, everything he's saying there, he's serious. he's not just politicking up there. That's all I wanted to say.
Well, Bill, let me...
have a good day.
Bill, don't why did you retire? Was it just time?
It was my time. I've been there for a long time. The chief had me working in a program with children, and I'm middle-aged now, and it was my time. He was very gracious about it. He didn't want me to retire, but he was the best that I've seen in a long time. He's serious. I worked with him on the street, and I watched him climb the ranks. He's a good chief.
Well, Bill, don't go away because I want to give him a chance just to respond to your comment. Anything you want to say in response?
I think if we had a 100 officer Reeds, we could do with 300 less officers. Bill Reed was one of the best cops that we had. He led by example. Often, and even in the old organization, when we were changing culture, he did the right thing. Bill epitomizes integrity, which is doing the right thing when no one is looking. And he was a true leader, and it's because of people like Bill and many of the former Camden City police officers who took a leadership role in helping to shape and mentor the young men and women that have come on this organization that has helped us to establish this culture of community first.
Okay,
Thank
Bill.
Thank you, Bill.
Thanks. Thank you, Chief. I appreciate it.
Thanks for the call to Radio Times, Bill. Bill Reed, you said, right?
That's correct,
okay,
yeah.
Now we know his last name. Let me get Dan from Haddonfield to join us on Radio Times. Hi, Dan. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hello. Hi. Yes, thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I want to also thank Chief Thompson for all of his work. I've watched him in a number of interviews on national television, as well as reading numerous articles about his efforts, and I want to thank you very much for the work in keeping the people of Camden safe. I do sort of have a question directed to Sister Helen and
sure.
her experience, and I wanted to try and make it as quick as possible, but I'm very confused as a resident of Camden County and someone who's very interested in social justice and alleviation of poverty and, you know, bringing innovative jobs to areas like Camden. Why, in your view, has some of the huge amounts of money that have been spent on Camden through tax appropriations been seen so little headway, you know, in the areas that are outside of the waterfront with the Susquehanna Center and all the development in the immediate vicinity of the Eds and Meds kind of center there, because there's so much work to do in Camden, and there's just fantastic people like yourself and Father Perthoff and Father Doyle and so many residents just working their hearts out to keep their children safe and to bring opportunities there.
Well, Dan, let me just jump in here. I think what he's asking is here. You know, there has been some investment of money in Camden, raising questions about the political system there or how that money has been spent or misspent. What are your observations, again, as a longtime resident?
Well, the first thing I just want to address is that I think what makes the city of Camden different from maybe a place like Philadelphia is the concentration of poverty. You know, there's not really an area of Camden that isn't affected by poverty and also the violence that follows. So I think that that's why sometimes it seems like we don't recover or there's not those places or people that we can really highlight to say, oh, look, you know, here's a success, here's
a
successful neighborhood,
uh-huh.
or here's a successful group. I think that's one part of it, because I often look at, like, Philadelphia, and I say, well, what makes us different? How come Philly isn't as bad-looking as we are? And I think that is one part of it, because Philly has nicer parts. You know, you have Roxburgh and Manayunk and other places that aren't as crime-ridden, whereas in our city, all of the money has to be spent for the entire city trying to save it. I do believe salvation can come to North Camden and to all of Camden. I mean, it's 9 square miles, you know, so it can happen. But I think it's a slow process. And as we know, and that's one of the things that has been hard in my 25 years, there has been corruption. There, you know, we've had mayors, we've had just chiefs of police, too, that have really disappointed us as a community. So I do think that the political part is a piece of it, but I also think this is so multifaceted that it is about single-run families. It is about the education system. You know, people won't want to come and live in Camden unless it's safe and it has a good school system. To me, they're the two things that we really need to get in place. So here we are now, we're getting the safety piece in place. And I think the next part we really need to concentrate on is the education piece, because education is the ticket out of poverty.
We have an email from Neil. I'll put this to you, Chief Thompson, which is, what about legalizing drugs and offering addiction treatment on demand? Wouldn't this reduce time and save money? Of course, you personally can't legalize drugs, but it is one of those issues that always swirls around when you find out about open-air drug markets or even people selling drugs in homes or abandoned buildings and people from outside the city coming in and creating a problem.
I don't believe we should legalize drugs. But at the same time, I don't think that taking an enforcement approach first and foremost with trying to address your drug problem is from an addiction standpoint, from the user standpoint. We can arrest drug users all day long. That doesn't change the chemical dependency that they have. We need to have more treatment facilities, more addiction counseling. And we see it with the heroin epidemic and the illicit use of prescription pills. The amount of people that are just constantly doing, and we know when we arrest them, it's not going to change the situation, right? Like they're going to continue to do what they're doing until there is another type of intervention.
Yeah, almost out of time. Do you want to add to that? Just in terms of, you talked a lot about drugs and people addicted to drugs in this hour.
Well, I think it goes back to the social fabric of Camden, and I think that even though we can really be hopeful with the success of the police department, that obviously, as I said, there's other parts of this community now that need our attention.
Well, on that note, my thanks to both of you. Sister Helen Cole, thank you very much for joining us today on Radio Times. And Chief Scott Thompson, thank you for joining us as well.
Thank you, Marty.
You're welcome. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times. And you can find out much more about this program, including check out some photos that we put on our Facebook page. I'm Marty Moscowane. Thank you for joining us in this first hour of Radio Times. And do stay with us. We'll be right back.